All right. Hello, everyone. Good to see you. tonight is the night that I began looking at Bernadette Roberts. This is still the guiding light because the guiding light is inspired book study with Regina Don Acres. I have two primary books I'm going to be using. The first one is called The Experience of No Self by Bernadette Roberts. The second one is called What is Self by Bernadette Roberts. And then there's a third book that will not be primary, but I just knocked my tea over. Hold on. Unfortunately, it had a lid on it. but I may reach for it from time to time. It's called Contemplative. And this is her autobiography about her childhood, and occasionally I may reach for it. Tonight, it looks like I'm going to start with The Experience of No Self, and I'm going to look at the introduction. Now, one thing I think it's important for you all to know is I do not plan to read this book word for word like I did Ramana Maharshi's book recently, or NTI. I did that when I was reading NTI 1 Corinthians, and I also did that when I was reading NTI Luke. So the three books that I've done in The Guiding Light, I've read from beginning to end, word for word. This I'm not going to. This I plan to read the sections that I underlined when I was reading the book. So some of you may be interested in reading on your own. And what you could do, like tonight, I'm going to look at the introduction of The Experience of No Self. You could then, between now and next Sunday, if you wanted to, read that introduction yourself. You know, the parts I cover are going to be so small that if you want to read all of it, you'll have time to do that. But because I'm going to be skipping around in the books, it's probably better to follow me than to try and read in advance what I'm going to be sharing, because I won't even be able to tell you in advance what I'm going to be sharing. So it's going to be completely intuitive. The way that I read these books originally was completely intuitive. I read The Experience of No Self and What is the Self at the same time. I skipped around in the books and went from book to book. There was no organized way of reading, and I'll probably be doing the same thing again. Since we don't have a lot of time, however, I'm now just going to jump right in, again, reading what I have underlined in my book from the introduction. This is the personal account of a 2-year journey during which I experienced the falling away of everything I can call a self. It was a journey through an unknown passageway, beyond my expectations, incomprehensible in terms of any frame of reference. And I think that's a really important beginning, because she's going to go into a lot of detail. And, you know, we had a quote in step one of the 7 steps to awakening that basically said something like, you know, the listener listens to the words, imagines what those words mean, and then imagines that he understands. And if there's to any degree possible that we can avoid doing that, that's helpful. Again, notice she says that the awakening was beyond her expectations and incomprehensible in terms of any frame of reference. So in spite of the fact that she's going to do her best to explain to us, we need to understand to the best of our ability that her words are not an accurate communication, because an accurate communication with words is not possible. Therefore, we can't take her words, imagine that we understand them, and therefore imagine that we understand her experience. Another thing I want to say about her books and the reason we're going into them is we are going to be looking for what is helpful for us on our own spiritual journey. Otherwise, it wouldn't be worth going into these books at all. So she will describe some experiences that we will not have in exactly the same way. So we kind of want to take her experiences lightly, But for example, she might go through a particular experience. Sometimes she goes through some pretty fearful experiences. And what she does is really decides to just choose trust as she goes through that. Instead of focusing on her actual experience, which we probably will never have in the exact same context, what we want to focus on is the trust she held to. Because whatever experiences we have, we're going to need that same trust, right? So we want to make sure as we're reading these books that we're paying attention to what's helpful for us and not getting too caught up in her own individual experience of awakening. I'm going to go ahead and turn to the next page of the introduction. This is page 10 in the book. She says, there is no longer any sense of my life, but rather our life, God and self. In this abiding state, God, the still point at the center of being, is ever accessible to the contemplative gaze, a point from which the life of self arises and into which it sometimes disappears. But this latter experience of loss of self is only transient. It does not constitute a permanent state. Now, it's important to remember that I said I'm skipping a little bit, you know, like I'm only reading the underlying parts. So let me give you some context for what I just read. She is not referring to the final awakening here, which she will get to. One of the things that she's very clear about in this book is that there are two awakenings. And this is something that I've emphasized throughout all of Gentle Healing. I think sometimes people forget. I can tell from their comments that they forget, and that's okay. But there are two awakenings. One awakening to consciousness, which she calls, I can't remember what she calls it. We'll figure it out as we go forward. The unity experience, not exactly. It has the word unity in it. But there's one awakening to consciousness, and then there's a second awakening, which is beyond the world entirely. So when you hear people talking about their awakening, and yet they're talking about how they experience the world with no self now that they've awakened, they're still talking about that first awakening, right? The second awakening is beyond the world entirely. And what Bernadette Roberts is going to talk about in these two books is how she awakened first to the no self in the world, and then awakened beyond the world, right? And in fact, she concludes at some point that the purpose of the first awakening is to prepare you for the second awakening. And I think that this is completely aligned with what A Course in Miracles teaches, because A Course in Miracles talks about basically awakening to the real world, and then it talks about a second awakening, which is beyond perception entirely. So that first awakening to the real world, to consciousness, unity, whatever you want to call that first awakening, non-dualism, whatever you want to call that first awakening, that is, even though most people who awaken to it think it's a final awakening, that is actually a stage in order to become established in that awakening and to be prepared for the next awakening. And we're going to see a lot of that in her book. So again, talking about the first awakening. In fact, let me read a little bit of this that I didn't underline. She says, within the traditional framework, the Christian notion of loss of self is generally regarded as the transformation or loss of the ego, which is the lower self, as it attains to the higher self in its union with God. In this union, however, self retains its individual uniqueness and never loses its ontological sense of personal selfhood. And then she goes on to talk about what that experience was like for her. And again, what she's saying here is that when you look at the Christian mystics, the Christian literature, this is the only awakening they talk about. this first awakening. And she says this is why she sat down and wrote these books, because there's another awakening and nobody ever talks about that, right? But here she's describing her experience in that first awakening that they do all, the mystics do talk about in the literature. She says there is no longer any sense of my life, but rather our life, God and self. In this abiding state, God, the still point at the center of being, is ever accessible to the contemplative gaze, a point from which the life of self arises and into which it sometimes disappears. And she'll talk a lot more about this as we go forward in this book. She describes this disappearance of the self as ecstasy. This is what the Hindus would call samadhi. And this, she later realizes, is a part of the preparation for the final awakening. Because when she had these temporary loss of self, ecstasy or samadhi, there was no awareness of body or world. But as she goes on to say, this latter experience of loss of self is only transient. It does not constitute a permanent state, nor did it occur to me that it could ever do so in this life. So just like everyone else, when she was in that first awakening, she thought that was it. She thought that was the end of the road. So, you know, we can't really blame those who feel that they've fully awakened. You know, we can't call them ignorant. That's what it feels like. You know, it feels that way, but yet there's something still continuing. And again, she'll be very clear about what this continuation is. She says, because self at its deepest center is a run-on with the divine, I never found any true self apart from God, or to find the one is to find the other. So this is describing unity. Even though she refers to God and she refers to self, what she's saying is at the deepest center of her being, and that's very important words, at the deepest center of her being, which means there were times that she was at a more shallow part of her being, right? At the deepest center of her being, it all kind of ran together, God and self. She couldn't tell a difference between God and self at the deepest part of her being. In her autobiography, I think it's at age 10, she was really a spiritual prodigy, which we'll see as we look at some of those experiences. But at age 10, she started really looking within. And at age 10, she said no matter how deep she went within, all she ever found was herself. But it was more like different layers of self. And the deepest point of self was a mysterious still point, right? Kind of like a black hole. So it's really interesting in that although she talks about God and she uses that term because she's from a Catholic Christian tradition, the truth is as early as age 10, she meditated, although she didn't call it meditation. She was too young to know about meditation. She just looked within, right? She discovered that point at which she's describing here as God and self as one, but as a child, she said all she could find was herself. But yet she still described going in very, very deep to that point of nothingness. She says, however, that this center point where God and self is one, she says this was the limit of her expectations. Therefore, I was all the more surprised and bewildered when many years later, I came upon a permanent state in which there was no self, no higher self, no true self, or anything that could be called a self. Now remember, she spoke a moment ago about how during the first awakening, during that stage where she was awakened to unity consciousness, sometimes the self would entirely disappear within, which she calls ecstasy. She says years later, she was surprised and bewildered to find that as a permanent state. In other words, she walked through that final doorway without even knowing there was a final doorway. Imagine that. I see Sherla saying, what is she referring to when she mentions the abiding state? I'll tell you what, if you guys want to ask me questions, you're just going to have to interrupt me, because I already have no idea where that was or where I read that. So don't type on the board. I won't notice. If you have a question during this, just interrupt me. Say, hey, Regina, and ask your question right then while I'm talking about it, because then I can respond to it. Once I've moved on, it would take too much time to go back and find it. So, yeah, we'll make that the rule for this. Just interrupt with your questions at any time. How's that? She says she came upon a path that seemed to begin where the riders of the contemplative life had left off. But with the clear certitude of the self's disappearance, there automatically arose the question of what had fallen away. What was the self? What exactly had it been? Then, too, there was this all-important question, what remained in its absence? Through the Buddhist notion of, though the Buddhist notion of no self struck me as true, its failure to acknowledge or first come upon the wholeness of the self in its union with God naturally left the Christian experience of no self unaccounted for. So she seems to be saying here that Christians talk about awakening to unity. Buddhists talk about awakening to no self, nirvana. Nobody talks about the two together as a natural stage that you go through. And this confounds her. You know, why would Christians only talk about the unity phase? And why would Buddhists only talk about the nirvana, the no self? Why isn't anybody talking about, you know, first there's the ego self, then there's the unity self, then there's the no self? Or first there's the ego self, then there's unity consciousness, and then there's the no self. You know, she can't understand why she can't find books about this. You know, she knows she's not the first one to experience it, but nobody ever writes about it. She says, it is only when this transition is over, or when we have become acclimated to a new life, that the relative difference between the self and no self recedes beyond reach. But by this time, we have already seen what is down the road, and the need for clarification no longer exists. So I think she's saying here, maybe this is why nobody writes about it. You know, either the unity self is all they know, or once they've gone beyond it, they don't see any sense in going back and writing about the unity self, right? It's irrelevant. She says, I am convinced that the contemplative life is composed of two distinct and separate movements, well marked and defined by the nature of their experiences alone. The first movement is toward self's union with God, which seems to run parallel with the psychological process of integration, wherein the emphasis is on interior trials and dark nights by which the self is established in a permanent union with God, the still point and axis of its being. In this process, we discover that self is not lost, rather, a new self is revealed that functions from the deepest, innermost divine center. So one thing that's really important here is she's really talking about the phase that results in the loss of the personal ego. She's talking about the trials and the dark nights through which one goes in this process. And of course, those trials and dark nights are as testing or as dark as you are attached to the beliefs that you are being guided to let go of, right? The more you cling to a belief, the darker that night is going to be. The more willing you are just to let go, the easier it's going to be. I remember Peace Pilgrim said that this phase could be easy or very, very difficult. And then she said, mine was somewhat medium, right? Whatever that is. But this is moving to the end of the personal self, the end of the ego, which she calls union with God. In our language, we might call it union with consciousness, right? I am consciousness. All I'm aware of is consciousness. Everything is me, right? This comes about after the death of the ego, or the death of the sense of a personal self, the death of a sense of a me. Now, I was listening to Ishwar today when I was driving to La Vida, and it seems that he has awakened to this unity consciousness, right? He has fully awakened to the first awakening in the way he was describing things. He was completely describing a unity consciousness experience. Somebody asked him something about, I think it was George. I think George asked him, I see a bunch of people here. Was that you, George? I see a bunch of people here. I see a bunch of names here. What do you see? And he answered, I'm only talking to myself. You see, that's the unity consciousness perspective. So that's where he had awakened. And so this is the first thing she says. But then she says, following this first movement is an interval. And then she says it was 20 years in my case, during which this union is tested by a variety of exterior, not interior, trials, whereby the oneness is revealed in all its enduring depths of stability and toughness against all forces that would move, fragment, or disturb its center. So in the first awakening, I'm going to call it the preparation for the first awakening, this is mainly a focus of going within, right? Looking at your false beliefs, both the little s self-inquiry and the capital S self-inquiry, but all of your work is within. If Shauna says something and I feel offended, my job is to go within and find out why I feel offended, right? That's how we let go of the ego. That's how we see the ego is not real. It's just a bunch of thoughts, concepts, beliefs, and nothing more. But then she says, once you've awakened to the unity consciousness, after that, it's no longer an inward journey. It's an outward journey. And we'll learn more about that. But the focus changes. And you can see how that may be true, because now you're looking out and you're seeing consciousness everywhere. So in effect, there is no more in and out in the way that there was before the ego death, right? So there's no sense in going in anymore. Yourself is everywhere. And so now the journey becomes more of an outward focus, but the outward focus is a completely different outward focus than it would have been with the ego. Again, Eshwar said, I'm only talking to myself. So I'm still working with myself. It's just that now myself is seen differently, right? It's not just this, me as myself. The whole thing is myself. She says, finally, this is a stage in which, if exterior trials are not forthcoming, the contemplative may seek them, because the energy created by this union must move outward to find expression, to accept challenge, even suffering, as a way to both reveal and affirm this enduring love. So I guess the test that she is referring to is that no matter what occurs, I cannot be budged from abiding in the still point. Right? That's what's happening here, is making sure that no matter what happens, I cannot be budged from abiding in my still point. And I only have no minutes left, but let me just say this really quickly and then I'll end. I'm reminded of Byron Katie after her awakening to unity consciousness. she had an experience where she shifted, her awareness shifted into the body of an old woman who walked with a lot of pain and I think even smelled like urine because she couldn't clean herself well. That would be an example of one of these external tests, right? Where you want to abide at, in that still point. You still are aware of unity consciousness. You don't slip back into some type of ego consciousness, you know. Yeah, I guess that's all I have to say at this point. So what I will do is let go of the mic, and next week we will continue where we left off. But since I am starting with the introduction, if you want to, you could read the introduction in its entirety this week. Okay? All right.